For he's always glad when everything's bad, cause then his collections are good, 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 good. His nose knows no pathway of roses, no flowers that bloom in the spring. For it's catch as catch can for the scavenger man. Posterity, where is thy? All right, we're done.
That was so good, man. Hey there, this is Seth Waters from Channel 9. We're here at Dev Intersection in Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm here with the awesome Billy Hollis. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing fine, Seth. It's been a great week.
I know. I haven't seen you in a long time.
Well, we've had real work to get done.
Oh, yeah. I'm the guy that writes demoware.
That's
he
right.
Actually makes stuff for people. So you are known for UX, UI type design things. You go into organizations and help them understand how to do that. So tell us a little about how you do this.
Well, we started doing this at the beginning of the XAML era, even before iOS was a big deal.
Right.
My team focused on trying to deliver a better experience for the user because there's all kinds of interesting ROI on that.
Sure.
Better productivity and lower training and fewer errors and things like that. And when you start getting into modern UI technology stacks, the degrees of freedom to do that are so much higher.
Right.
At that time, HTML really wasn't quite there. HTML5 is better, of course, at that. But the preeminent technology for that, of course, is XAML.
Sure.
And so at the beginning of the XAML era, we did some fairly impressive apps, I think. We did an app called StaffLinks that was copied by literally hundreds of people. The video's out there, and I will put the link in
sure,
the show
absolutely.
If
we'll
you
put
wish.
It below, yeah.
So that was all the way back in 2008. And so my team concentrates on delivering that great experience, and our technology of choice is XAML, but we'll do web technologies if it's necessary. But we try to apply the principles of design. Visual principles for making it look good are certainly important, but even more important are the principles of interaction.
Sure.
Does it make sense to the user when they walk up to it?
So let's zero in on something that you said that I think you said so fast that people miss. Because usually as developers, we tend to look at UI UX as the we'll make it look pretty later, but let's make it work now. But you can assign a cost to bad design.
You can, under certain circumstances and making some certain reasonable assumptions.
Sure, and one of the things that you said is that people can be more productive with better design. Is there a way to quantify that? How do you do that?
Oh, there is actually, and I did an article about this. I don't know if you were aware of this.
I did not.
In MSDN Online about 2 years ago.
Okay.
It's called, Is UX Investment Worth It?
Sure.
And it basically has formulas that say, well, if you have this number of users, and they work on the application this many hours a day, and you save this much in productivity, and you pay them this much, then let's calculate what that is. And for example, the extreme end, I had one client with 9,000 users. They think they got it probably 10% productivity improvement, but even if you assume 5%, you're up in the $40 to $50 million a year range in labor savings.
That's like real dollars.
That's real dollars, especially compared to a design process to get that typically is somewhere around in the high six-figure, low seven-figure range, even for an enterprise-level app.
So let's get into some things that people do that maybe reduce productivity, and what are some prescriptive types of stuff that you suggest?
Okay, the key thing that most applications don't do well that slow people down is they can't find the information they need fast enough. We make it possible. We put up a list and we throw a data grid on there and they're expected to sort the columns or something and zero in. But what they're doing then is using the text processing parser in their head to scan through this stuff to find things, and that's just slower than competing techniques where you use the visual capabilities of the eyes for more shapes and graphics and things like that to zero in on the things that people are interested in.
I see. So what you're saying is that if at all possible, opt for something that gives meaning faster, text being the last one you should try.
That's right. Tech should be your last resort and not your first resort. And I actually did a Channel 9 video with Robert Green about a year and a half ago
on
this.
Oh, cool, yeah, we'll put
it down. So we can put that link in there, and it shows some of the data templates that you can use in the XAML world to use symbology. But I'll give you an interesting example from the most recent application that we worked on. It's for cattle management. I'm actually going to show it in a few minutes.
Yeah.
And the client has been great. One of the great, one most wonderful clients I've ever worked with. They're in Amarillo, Texas.
Fantastic.
Turnkey Business Systems. And so if you want to use symbology to identify records, we've got symbology for, if you're doing something related to cattle feed, we've got a symbol for that, a sheaf of grain. Or working on veterinary, we use a hypodermic needle
Absolutely.
Symbol. And then for cattle themselves, we would use a symbol of a cow.
Sure.
But then there are situations where you would like to indicate that you're dealing with cattle that have died during the process.
I see.
Well, you can turn the symbol upside down and now it indicates dead cattle. And that's intuitive to people at a level that words will never be.
And not only that, but if you're like getting an overview, when you, here's one of the things I learned from you, because we did a tour once together on these principles. Get the most important information out and make it easy to find.
That's right. There's a design principle called progressive disclosure. Get the most important stuff there first. Make it easy to find the next layer of things that they need. And drill down is an example of progressive disclosure. But in order to do it well, you have to understand the user and their job well enough to know what information is important to them. See, if you're just throwing a data grid up there, you don't really know which columns are important to them and which ones are not.
Are there any other bad examples of, like, the data grid is obviously one example, but what are some other things that you've run into where you're like, this could be much better, it should not be this way, and we can change it?
Yes. Well, one of the more common things that I run into is it surprises me how many applications don't take into account either most frequently used or most recently used.
I see.
It depends upon the job flow as to which of those is important, you see. If you work with the same people over a long span of time, then you should provide a most frequently used
sure,
list.
Sure.
But if you are in, say, a transportation company, where you keep coming back to the same records because you're trying to arrange a shipment over a span of 2 or 3 hours, now what you need is the most recently used records. Well, with a good architecture and a little bit of interaction design, you can expose a list of the most recently used or most frequently used.
And that's not a hard thing to do.
It is not a hard thing to do, but it's surprising how few business applications do it. I've seen cases where it was so tedious to go through a normal searching process. I saw a user do this. I have a picture of this operator actually wrote down a 9 or 10 digit ID for a record that she worked on. So, and then typed that back in later rather than go through the search screens.
Oh my goodness.
So that tells you how slow the search screens were.
So it feels like as a developer, because we think we're not involved with interactive design or the design aspect of stuff. But as a developer, if you're making sort of this schema of data, you also need to be aware of what is most important.
You do. You have to, and that almost always requires some observation of users. You'd really like to sit with them and see how they actually do their jobs, and then you get a sense. Failing that, you can get some user experts to come in. So for one system for temporary staffing that we did, that StaffLinks example, when you start looking at the data, you'll see that for temporary employees, it's the biggest piece of information in each item is how many days has it been since this person worked with us on a temporary job. Because if it's been more than 25 or 30 days, they've probably moved away or gotten a full-time job. How did we find that out? We had a member of our team who had owned a temporary staffing company for over 10 years and sold it, and he knew what information is important. He'd never seen a system like this. But when we asked, how do you judge whether or not this is the right temporary employee to talk to, he said, I look to see how long it's been. But what he was doing was looking at a date that was buried about 2 or 3 levels down.
Oh, man.
And then calculating mentally how long it had been. And so I said, well, we can put that in the first layer of information that people see.
Sure.
And we can let the computer tell you how many days or months it's been.
Absolutely.
And that's then an intuitive, fast way to do it, which means that he can zero in on that piece of information very quickly.
And another anti-pattern that I think goes along with this that I've been guilty of is feeling like I need to give them all the information, and then we start introducing tabs with grids, with other stuff, and that's the wrong thing to do. Why?
Well, that's the wrong thing to do from several points of view. There are design principles having to do with how people visually process and cognitively process information.
Sure.
And if you've ever seen, for example, the video of the two teams passing basketballs around, it tells you that people will miss things they're not looking for. So at any particular point in a workflow, a typical user needs a small subset of the information that's on the screen. And the rest of it is visual clutter. And having that visual clutter there actually slows them down in finding what they want. But the key is, if you're going to try to take away things, you can't take things away that people actually need at the point that they need it. Then you'll frustrate them.
Sure.
So you, if you understand their jobs well enough, then you can declutter and introduce information as it's needed. Now that's a radically different way of thinking about it. That requires a radically deeper understanding of what the user does. And that's why the user observation and things like that are important. But we're almost being forced into it, Seth, because as we move to tablets, you know, there's my Surface, and phones and things like that, we simply don't have the luxury of throwing things at them. We don't even have a data grid in Windows 10 Universal Apps XAML. So we are being forced by the technology into understanding what people need better and decluttering to get down to the essence of what their job is.
So speaking to this, does that mean as a developer I have to write something first, put it out, and then figure it out? Or can you do some stuff beforehand, or is it a combination of both?
Now you're feeding me a softball here, because you know what my answer is on this. You've heard me talk about this often enough. Yes, it's most teams don't think about a dedicated design process up front. Mm-hmm. And in an era where you're going to face those kind of challenges, you're going to radically change the way their software looks for different devices. And if you're going to do that, you have to have a dedicated design process up front.
Sure.
That requires some user observation and some sketching and ideation phase. It doesn't have to be really long, as short as 2 weeks for a modest size app. We almost never do it more than about a month. So this is not huge in the course of a long development cycle.
Yeah.
But it's essential to zero in on the psychology of the user and their workflow and what information is important. If you just, even with the very best of intentions, if you say, yes, these are the principles we're going to follow, here, dev team, start writing stuff that does that. Well, I get a call about once a month from somebody that says, we're just about finished with our app, and we need you to come in and you know, put a good design on it. And I don't even know what to say at that point.
Make your billable hours really high.
No, I won't even do it. I will never succeed. That's the old Southern expression of lipstick on a pig is the best I can do. I can help them decorate that app, but I can't help them design it.
Because there's like an information architecture type discussion that should have been had months before.
Yeah, several steps before that, where you do zero in on which flows are most important, what data is important at each point. I'll give a tangible example which will probably help people kind of understand exactly how the process goes. I worked with a company that they did ordering of produce. And it was kind of assumed by the decision makers at the beginning that whatever we came up with would just be a marginal improvement over what they had, their data grid-based design, because the manager told me, well, our users love their data grids. Well, if they don't know anything else, they probably do.
Yeah.
And so most people are familiar with this idea of an ordering process in a data grid that uses different columns at different points in the process. And that's fundamentally the way they did it. Now, from a developer standpoint, that's easy as pie.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, you just knocked that right.
10 minutes.
But the users have to kind of understand themselves which data to use at various times. There's not a lot of logic built in to steer them through the process or to validate it at any stage what they've done. So what we designed instead was an architecture where it was very easy for them to choose the thing they wanted using all those visual techniques I talked about. And then once they chose the order they wanted to work on, there was logic behind the scenes to know what stage of the ordering process are we in, with kind of a pivot way we would think of as a pivot in the Windows 10 world to move back and forth between the stages. And but underneath the surface was enough logic that when they completed a stage, it knew what the next stage was. So there were pluggable pieces for each stage, optimized for entry at that stage, with all kinds of interesting validation in and dragging so that they could say, yes, this is going to be fulfilled from this warehouse and things like that. So that now, no data grids, the users looked at it and said, this is clearly better. The thing about it is, users won't believe that you can come up with a better design until you do.
Yeah, it's because, we've been battleship graying this thing for many years.
We've been so mediocre so long, they just assume we're going to be mediocre. That's the reason they keep telling you, put everything on the screen. Because they assume if you don't put it right there where they can eventually, then they'll never find it.
So we've talked a lot conceptually about these things. Do you have something to show us that you can tell us some of these principles?
My wonderful client was nice enough to give me a chance to show this. Let me explain a little bit about where we are and what this is going to be. This app, as I mentioned, is for cattle management. Mm-hmm. And what my team did was to write the navigation shell. And this is a pure universal app. Now, this was all done in Windows 10.
Yeah.
And they are coming from some fairly old technology, so they wanted something with a long shelf life. That's
sure.
the reason they chose universal apps. They were looking at WPF, but they wanted something that they've been in business since the 70s.
Oh.
So they tend to take the long view
sure.
on software platforms. So we did a navigation shell for them, which we do in even back in things like Windows Forms,
right.
the thing that brings in all the screens, all mm-hmm. the views, and handles the menuing. And usually there's some frameworky things. In particular, in Windows 10, there were a few places where we had to produce controls for them because the Windows 10 control set is still
young.
That's a right. good term for young. It. Young, maybe a touch immature. Mm-hmm. So we did those things for them, and they'll be developing the actual application screens. Mm-hmm. But I will show the shell, a placeholder for the dashboard, and some of the security screens for people to get an idea of what a business application for Windows 10 desktop mm-hmm. business application
sure.
can look like. So let me bring up Visual Studio for it. It's right there. And fire it off. This is a real application, by the way, and it may run a little bit slow at times because my internet connection, as you know, yeah. before we got started was a little flaky. But I came up first time then. Good. So we have a dashboard that tells people the sort of things that you would expect them to need as a part of their workflow. And I find that dashboards are not usually used very effectively. In many cases, they're not used at all. If they are, they're not designed as well as they should be. But we have alerts, for example, and we've done this routinely all the way back in WPF, to find things in the system based on parameters and rules that they need to pay attention to that they might not have even known that they needed to pay attention
to. So let's see. I'm going to try to just guess what this is doing. Just to show you, because I just looked at this.
This is the first time you've ever seen
it. And I'm getting a good sense of what's going on. This thing over here to the left, right below Thursday mm-hmm. October, is telling you what capacity is in whatever warehouse you have of cows, right?
Yeah, well, it's not a warehouse. It's actually feedlots out in the open.
See, I was close enough.
You were close enough.
Right?
If you were in the business, you would recognize that was a map of the feedlots that you have.
And it's looking like, man, I have some capacity for more cows,
yeah,
maybe.
You have a certain amount of capacity, and you can tell just from the color scheme.
And then over here, when you look to the right, I mean, I don't even have to explain what's going on. The only thing that might be a little that I don't know about is 14 import files waiting to receive. That simply means there's some work that needs to be done.
That's right. There are auxiliary systems that produce information that has to be imported.
And so, I mean, just like me looking at this right away, to me it seems like this particular program is optimized for me to think about where are the cattle and are they being fed?
That was the idea. And we went through a design process thinking we were going to do it in WPF to come up with some of these things. We do use the Windows 10 style mm-hmm. menu so that they're collapsible if you kind of know what the iconography means. But if you're new at it, you can pop them out there. And we, of course, have searching capability because these people will eventually have dozens of modules and hundreds of screens. But if you want to get down to the things that are concerned with cattle, then there is a search there. And in fact, you can see there's a search here for alerts. There's a search for messages. Anytime that you have a situation where you're going to have a lot, you ought to have a way for people to dive in there and filter that list down instead of having to scroll through it or make some kind of a data grid where
sure.
they sort it or something like that. So that's a basic Windows 10 style menu there. I'll show you some of the screens, how they look. We can show the security screens. I don't show any of the application screens, of course, because
absolutely.
that's kind of proprietary stuff for them. But here's the user list. And I don't know if the animation will come quite as well in on the screencast.
No, it will.
We'll see. Coming good. And so if you pick up then a particular
It just
item,
feels like you're playing with butter and stuff.
Yeah, it's just kind of got that smoothness
yeah.
to it. And this, of course, is the typical kind of screen where we would have information about the user. What yards do they have permission to be in?
Mm-hmm.
What roles do they have? And this is a good place to show some of the visualization. Notice that when I highlight there, see the teal line underneath, that's directing attention to where the focus is.
Yeah, it's subtle, but it's very,
exactly. It does not really get in your way, but as I go through it, then that's a way of directing focus. And the built-in controls don't do that. I think they should.
Okay. Yeah,
so tell the Microsoft
guys. I'll tell them.
They should. The built-in theme doesn't do that. But so we added that kind of capability
sure.
based on our information and knowledge from the WPF days. And so if you do that, then you find out the little subtle red bar
sure.
over on the right and the information about what has gone wrong with data validation. So we also built some components to help them do that very easily.
There's so much going on here, and I think people miss. Like, for example, you did this quick probably because you wrote this.
Yes.
But as you were hovering around, it's clear what I'm focused
yes.
on all the time.
Without any very bright colors.
Yeah.
And I think the overall look of the app kind of shows that there's I think this is something that people, and Microsoft in particular, tends to get wrong, is they tend to go too bright with the colors.
Okay.
For something that people need to be in front of all day, you'd like the colors to be a bit more muted and subtle.
Sure, great advice.
You want the difference as you go up and down. Mm-hmm. You really want to be able to see where you are without any trouble, but you really, I'm sorry, I don't mean to be a basher of these things, but these colors right here are too bright.
Yeah, they could be.
For something that people are going to sit in front of all day long. Because what you'd like to do is have something that feels calming. Look, people have enough stress in their jobs.
Yeah. Some people stress about the stress they have in their
yes.
jobs.
And we are a little bit more, this is not obvious, but we are a little bit more some gentle curving off of the corners and such. We're not quite as sharp-edged.
Sure.
Again, it's a matter of, there's a design principle for that called contour bias mm-hmm. that curved edges tend to make people feel calm. Sharp edges make people feel excited.
Sure.
Now, the question is, do you want them to feel calm or excited?
Right.
For a routine business app, our position is you'd like them to feel calm. So you'd like it to not be too sharp-edged. And that's where the word edgy
yeah.
comes from.
And this is interesting because now, obviously, we're not going to have time to go through, because he has a list, and it's a very, very in-depth list of here's this, and as you go through it, you're like, I didn't do that right. And the thing about it is it requires us to think about our users, but as developers, we typically only think about our data.
We think about our own needs.
Our data and where we're going to put it.
Data, code organization, things like that. Because I'll give an example for the developers in the audience to kind of understand where I think the thinking goes astray. And that comes up when people discuss the MVVM pattern,
sure.
which I think has certain places where it works really well. In Universal Apps, for example, you might very well want to use an MVVM pattern because now you can use the same view model against different views on different devices.
Absolutely.
So there's clearly value there. On the other hand, if you talk to people that come at UI technology stacks from a technical point of view, they just want to pound into you that that's the first thing you should learn and you should always use it in every system. Well, gosh, advanced technology stacks are there to provide a better user experience. Isn't that a little higher on the priority list than how the code is organized?
Right.
I mean, to me it is. And it's not that I think that those things are bad. I think that as developers, we tend to put our own needs and priorities ahead of the user needs and
sure.
priorities. Because it pushes us into some uncomfortable areas to think about. I think a lot of developers lack the confidence that they can produce an app of
right.
that level of quality. And to be honest, that level is a pretty high bar to go after, but they can certainly do a lot better than they do now. I work with corporate teams all over the country, and they're able to produce apps that meet the expectations of a smartphone generation of users.
That's awesome. Well, we're kind of out of time. Where can people go to learn more about these principles that you lay out so well?
Well, most of the links are on my company's website, which is nextver.com.
Sure, sure.
And you can see some of the case studies and some of the linked videos and things that we have done there. And in addition to that, if they want to learn about it in general, there are a couple of good books to start with. And we have some reference materials on our website for this. That there's a book called Universal Principles of Design.
I have it.
You have that, but the blue and white book.
Yeah, he told me.
He's talking about it, yes. And that's good for design principles, understanding them. I have a Pluralsight course, mm-hmm. which discusses a lot of the principles in that book. So that's a good starting point. Then there's also a good book for design process. For a lightweight design process, the book is called Sketching User Experiences, the Workbook. And Bill Buxton,
of course,
of Microsoft Research, is one of the authors of that. So that's a good book to start for design process. And finally, if you want to look at patterns and sort of understanding what the possibilities are for navigation, I have a white paper on my website. And I'll put a link to that.
Absolutely.
In the video.
So how many dev intersection conferences have you been to?
I've lost count.
Is it that many?
It is that many.
So what do you think?
Well, it's been exciting here because of 1,500 people here or whatever. It's some big number. I don't even know the exact number. It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's crowded and you go into lunch and it's vibrant and there's a lot of stuff going on. This of course, is a little bit more of a web-focused conference, but I've found my group of native development people.
Nice.
And we're having a good time talking about things. So it's the sessions that I've done, mostly on Windows 10 development, have been pretty well received. I did one on lessons learned in developing the application that you just saw. There are some interesting things there, and I'd be delighted to talk to anybody who wants to talk about that in more detail.
Well, I know people on the XAML team. We did a video on how to actually, like, this app could probably work on a Raspberry Pi.
That just amazes me that they can get the rendering stack
right.
to that point.
And so thanks so much for spending some time with us, Billy Hollis. Look his stuff up. It's good stuff. Again, I am Seth Juarez. We're here in Las Vegas for Dev Intersection. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time. Take care.